So, dear friends, today is October the 12th, Tuesday, 2010. So, I'm going to test you a little bit here. See whether you, whether it's where your instant insight is. So, what is one thing that we sure for life in life?
That we what?
We are sure for in life. Sure that certainty in life. What is one thing?
Change.
Change.
Everything changes.
Change is for sure. It's certainty, right? What else?
Loving kindness.
You can read my mind. Today.
Death.
Death is certainty. Yes, that's what I want to say. Thus the Buddha say, death is certain, is for sure. But what is uncertain? There's many things uncertain, but in according to the teaching of the Buddha, what is uncertain?
Everything
is uncertain.
That's not a good answer, though, right?
Because if you contemplate every day, you will know. So the Buddha say death is certainty. And the Dalai Lama also say that, repeat of the Buddha. But the time of death is uncertainty, for sure. Mm. Every one of us here is dying one day, right? But we don't know when. So the time of dying is uncertainty, right? The time of death is uncertainty. I want to say that because there is impermanence, right? Thepap Ang spoke to teach today, right? As you know. And he came, and suddenly, and one of his Sangha members, he told the story. The story of his Sangha member, the one that who get ALS, something, ALS, the one that have ALS. He tell the story, the one of his Sangha had. ALS.
A Sangha member?
One of his
Sangha members. Texas, right?
In Texas. So the doctors say that she will be, you know, maybe a couple of weeks, and suddenly, just a day or two, she will be gone. be passing away. So he might be died today already. So on Sunday night, and after Sunday activities, they will have to ride away, to go back to be there for her, support her in the last moment of her last breath, last moment of life. So that's why I say death is uncertainty, and the time of death is uncertainty, but death is for sure. But we are, one day we'll be gone. But how you want to die is up to us. Right? You have that choice. And how you want to die is also up to us. Right? How you live, that means how you will die. If you live struggling, moment by moment every day, at the last moment you will be the same. Because the form might be changed, but the mental states will be struggle. Because struggle, right? So how we want to die or how we want to live is up to us. So we all have that choice. The Buddha is not going to control our life, right? To manage our life. The Bodhisattva or even God not going to control our life. But we are our author, the author of our life. Right? We are the author of our life. However you want to write your book of life, then you write. You have the choice to write your book of life. And that book of life through your action, your speech, and your thoughts. It have no form, but this will be right there in every intentions that we have. So we have that choice how we want to write our book of life. But he will come back again on next week, Tuesday, so he will teach the class Tuesday and Friday. I'll be in school. So when we look, sit down and do a lot, contemplations, reflect, and we'll see. And when we sit down, our mind have to be in a stillness stage, so we're able to see the river of our thoughts that flow. The rivers. So thoughts is like a river. They continuously flow. Right? If we are aware, we see that our thought is like a river. Just like a river of feelings. It's continuously flowing, day and night. And our thoughts is like that too. But sometimes we are aware of that, but sometimes we are not. So today I would like to continue our studies. Last time we haven't finished yet. Do you remember what I have shared with you? Or have you been returned to me? That's a good student. But we have shared last time we didn't finish.
That you were teaching?
Yes. We all have good memory. Mm-hmm.
We all flow.
We were going over the five obstacles.
Yeah, five hindrances or obstacles. That we have shared, I have shared with you the five hindrances. This five hindrance is defined as the five negative mental state. The five negative mental state that obstructs our meditations, our practice. especially in our meditations, these five hindrances. So I have been sharing with you the first one. This is the review. So, Nicole, what is the first one?
Anger?
Anger. No?
No.
Everyone. Attachment.
Yeah.
Starts with an A.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I did know that. I just get test anxiety.
Glad you can remember.
Huh?
Or sense of desire. How you want to and for me, I think sensual desire or attachment is the biggest obstacle. And I think as human, sexual desire is the most obstacle for many. It's the big obstacles in the especially in the practice of meditations. We have many kind of desire, but in the text, the Buddha talk a lot about sexual desires. We come in here because of this here. We're born in this world because of this desire. Desire, especially when with the personal conception in the modern world. If as according to biology, then if you are a boy, then you are attached to what?
I didn't buy into that part of the speech. I blew that off and gave it back to my teacher back in psychology.
So if you, the time of conception, if you are a boy, you mostly attached to your mom, right? You all study biology and
Yeah.
If you are a girl, you're more attached to the father. And this has been, you know, like running the life of many, every one of us here, attachment, some kind of sensual desires. And it's a big obstacle in our our practice of meditation. Sensual desire is an energy, you know, an energy of have a desire to get hold of some kind of touch, some kind of feeling. And we can list thousands. We have, if we was to write, to have a list of desire, we can have a thousand things on that list, right?
Mm-hmm.
You attach to your house, you attach to your children, you attach to your partner, you attach to your, even the chair. Even the chair.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was in school, I always liked to sit in that chair. And somehow I was sit in that chair when I was in school. So I was kind of attached to. Robert?
What about the pillow?
Yeah, even the pillow. Even the pillow too.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Even your pillow, your pillow that you sleep to a pillow, you know, you attach to that too, and your smell, right, to that pillow. If someone else smell, you might not able to sleep, right? Yeah, but just you smell your own smell, and you say, "Ah, this is mine." And you feel some kind of comfort in that, your own smell, your own smell. Even that too. You see, very, very small things are still attached. And even the pen that we write, you know, if we use a pen repeatedly, perpetually, and if someone were to steal it, we get angry right away, right? Because you got too attached to that. So we can list a thousand things, even a million things, even to our slipper that we wear. We still see, you see how much that we may attach to the thing that we have. So that's why the Buddha said it's an obstacle on our way of liberation. Because on the path of liberation, you have to let everything go, even this body. Even this body. We have to let go. So that is the sins of equanimity. Equanimity. I mean letting go. So the more you're able to let go, the more you have the space in yourself. You can move easily. You imagine that the earth is very big, right? It's physically it's very big. But sometimes we attach to that and the earth becomes very small. It's very small. Even the big earth, and then the earth becomes very small when we are attached to that. And this one we can we can talk many hours about our the things that we attach to. Even our feeling, you know? Our own feeling. We also attach to our own feeling. A feeling of comfort. We attach to that. And some that's why when the feeling of pain or feeling of unpleasant feeling, and we try to, you know, reject that. But the feeling of comfort, then we try to hold on to, and always come back to us. Especially in physical sense of pleasures. And it's become an image, a seed of obsessive, you know. And that's how we rebirth, how we continue the circle of cyclic existence, just keep going and going. Because of that obsession in us, especially when you have like human contact, people contact, and then you have that image of that person in your consciousness. Imagine that, for example, imagine for a prostitute, and then he has slept many men, and each time one man comes into their life, that man image is dropped as a seed. Into her consciousness. And that's where the circle of existence keeps circling. That's why. So whatever, doesn't matter, whatever you attach on your path of liberation is still an obstacle. Even in your meditation, a moment of bliss, you attach that, you still have this attachment. So the Buddha say that even that moment in your concentration, in your meditative stage, you have to let that bliss go too. Even that.
I was listening to a CD. And they said if you recognize that moment of bliss in your meditation, as soon as you go, oh, I like that, it's gone. Is that true? Because I've never gotten there.
Yeah,
so when it comes, you have to just
experience that. It's naturally experience that. You don't have to hold on to the same thing, but just let it be as it is. That moment of bliss in your consciousness, in your meditative moment. But the more you have let it be, the more it's be there. But the more you hold on to it, just like your children, the more you hold on to him or her, the more she try to struggle and to get away from you. Mm-hmm. Right? But the more you let her be, she will come back. Come back. Because she know that in that she have the space to come back. But the more you try to hold on, grasp onto her or to him, and he or she try to run away from you. Because in that grasping, there is suffocate. Suffocate into that. So even in your bliss stage, you have to let it go. And the more you let go, the more you become light. Right? You become light. And the path is open to you. That is the beauty of it. The more you let it go, the more it's be there for you. That's the beauty of equanimity. It's the beauty of letting go. Just the same thing, if the more you open your hand, and the more you do, there's the small space. But the more you close your, what you call, fist, close it up. The fist close. Even though there's air and space is there, but it's still suffocated. But the more you open it, but it's still there, still there. The air is still, the space is still there. Half is more vast. This letter. So it doesn't matter what you attach to. The beauteous things in this life you attach to is still an obstacle. An obstacle. Because there is, the more you hold on attached, the more there is, in order to hold on attached, there is a sense of self. Maybe coarse and maybe subtle. This can be coarse. So for example, when you walk, for example, you walk meditations, and the more you relax, right, and you're not attached to the step, and the more solidity is there. You feel it, solidity, because they have the space to the feet to be moved, and in the ease state, in state of solidity. But the more you try to hold on to that step, the more you feel nervous, right? Yeah. You feel nervous or you feel some kind of fear there. And you feel the energy, the feet is shaking, shaking somehow. But the more you let it go, the more it's in a natural state of relax. So you become naturally with the step. It's like that. That is how let go we to be. So is the, you know, bliss days. In the stage of bliss, we still have to let it go. Let it go. So I just wanted to say briefly about that. We have talked about this already. So even your dog, we have animal, and we normally dog is very loyalty, right? Very loyalty, mm-hmm. and very patient and very loving, and we love it very much. But it's not, and we have very some. We have dog. We have attached to that dog too. Attached to the dog. That's why I didn't. I like dog. I, you know, they are very dogs. Very loyalty, and very friendly. Never talk back. Yes. Never talk back. Did you read the speech that I posted out there? The best speech in 1,000 years. The man, his name is George something, yeah. And he's when he got his degree and he take up the case of the neighbor who killed the dog, and he just wrote the speech, and he read it in front of the court, the judges, and he win the, he say that in this life. Your loyalty friend one day have to leave you. Your partner one day have to leave you. Your best friends one day have to leave you. When you reach, you have a lot of friends. But when you are in corruption, you lost your friend. The dog, you have the dog. And even you scold at the dog never say anything. You yell at the dog never say anything. And even in a cold winter, you sleep on the bed and the dog sleep next under your bed or next to your bed. And even one day, you go to the court, to the graveyard, the dog will be accompanying you and waving you for you at the graveyard, even though you pass away. So the dog is very loyalty to his owner. But your friend can betray you at any moment. Your partner can betray you at any moment. If you satisfy her or him, then she still be good at you with you. But if you not, then he or she can betray you. So you read the speech, and I read it, and I like it, so I post it so people can read. Robert, you want to say something?
Why do people betray each other?
There is, it's according to the teaching of the Buddha, we have either negative karma or positive karma. We come together as a force of attractions, a force of attractions, or correctly you say karma, karma, connection. We all sit here, we have somehow, we have related to each other in many lifetimes. I believe that we have. But some people come to us as a friend, but some people come to us as an enemy. Because you may own him or her something, like you have done something for him or her, according to the teaching of the Buddha, on the law of rebirth or the law of karma, then we have done something in the past, but as the naked eye, we don't see it. The cause and effect. So the Buddha say that as we move on the path, we have more faith on cause and effects, and more careful on cause and effect. We've done something, but we don't, without awareness, without mindfulness, we'll plant some seeds, either positive seeds or negative seeds. It's the same thing you go on the path of spiritual. You are planting the seeds of awakening, right? You're planting some seeds there in your consciousness, whether you know it or not. You're planting some seeds there. So that seed one day will be blossoms. So you will bear the fruit. You are the one who bear the fruit and who harvests that fruit. So in this life, we learn how to be tolerance and acceptance. Right? So we're accepting naturally that the karma has happened, but as a practitioner, we know how to solve it in a way that result in a way that not planting more negative seeds. That is the difference. The difference is someone who don't know to continue. For example, if anger, if someone don't know, they continue to nourish a seed of anger, and the anger keep growing, whether they know it or not. But the difference is, you as a practitioner, you will be transformed that seed of anger in you, so you don't plant more unwholesome seeds for this life and many life to come, for this moment. So that's why I say at the beginning, you choose your path. What kind of seed you want to plant? Just like a farmer, for example, as a farmer, the beginning of the spring, when the sun come out, whatever fruits the farmer want to harvest, then he have to plant the seeds, right? He have to, if he want to harvest corn, then he have to plant some seed of corn, right? So in a few months or a couple of months to come, he will harvest that fruit of corn. So on the same, on the path of spiritualist level also. So when we understand that, we try to live our life so that we don't plan more costs of unwholesome seeds for us. So the more we're able to accept naturally and work naturally, we have so it depends, whatever's happened to us, it depends on our attitude toward the situation, so that we can plan more wholesome seeds or unwholesome seeds, right? For example, someone to come at you and try to target at you and say something very shocking, very provoking, then you, if you have a calm attitude, then you don't react to that. You don't react to that, whatever that person tried to provoke you. Right? That is the difference of the practitioner. And you can calm, if your mind is calm, you react totally different. You can turn that person around 180 degrees.
My friend Annie, who was here on Friday, told me the story about recently they were cutting down some trees, dead trees that were right next to their driveway, but it happened to be on somebody else's property. And one of the neighbors is grumpy and got all upset and called the police and called the landowner. And the landowner came and was being very rude, according to the police officer, to her husband for quite a while. And so she was thought, no wonder there's war in the world, because we can't do this. So she thought, how do I bring peace to this little situation? And she ended up going, because he was upset. The landowner was concerned that they were going to sell the wood. They were chopping down his trees, and they were going to sell it. So they had told him, take whatever you want, you know, just load it up. And so he was loading some up, and so she decided in a peacemaking effort to help load the wood. And after he had gotten so upset and was just angry, she just went over and started helping, and they started talking, and he was a really nice guy, and he's a doctor, she's a nurse, both their kids have, you know, they had all these things in common. And she said, you know, really our intention was just to get rid of fuel. And he said, well, just next time, just give me a call. And that was that step, I think, that we're not sure what to do, and she did it, so.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so peace or war is dependent on us. You can make war with us, or can make peace with us. Sometimes we have making war with our own self. Do you know that? And sometimes it's our blues, and then we just suddenly we get angry. Have you ever I experienced myself. Our blue, because the season's inside us already. And certain things, very small things, and it's click. And that seed of anger pop. Right? It's like that. Just like Joe and thou, though, I just been experiencing like last few weeks, you know, been drive up here and down here. We have the road is like sometimes they are do the constructions for the road for preparing for the winter, and sometimes it's the line is long, you know, it's waiting, and you can choose to be upset or you can choose to be at peace. Easily, it's like that. You say, oh, why don't you know? I just sit here and breathe and practice instead of. And then sometimes I drive home, I say, I have to go home, and I have to go back and do my chanting, and say, why don't I do chanting in the car? You know? And instead, and then I go home and rest. Yeah. I can be angry, but I can be at the same time, I can be at peace. So it's very much up to us. So that's why the Buddha said that you, as the author of your life, the author of your life is like that. The Buddha is not going to control your destiny, but you are the one that will be controlling your destiny, where you want to go. It's depend on you. It's up to you.
So the next one is ill will or hatred or anger. And we have been talking about this, and
and anger is in every one of us. You know, we all have the seeds of anger. We all have the seeds of anger.
Sometimes anger is burning us day and night. You know, some people is they very
easy to angry. Any small thing, and they get angry right away. So the anger, the energy of anger is so huge in them. And I was when I would look at that person, I say, oh, they're burning themselves day and night. And so when you have a lot of anger, and you don't have peace. Even though you look at any person that is beautiful, peaceful, you still be angry. You say, why you look at me? You know, it's like that. So anger is pervasive in all of us. And this had been caused a lot of destruction for many people, you know. The more anger you have in your life, the more damage you create for yourself. So anger always go along with damage. Doesn't mean destructions. Yes. So we have been talking about this anger. And there's anger management. You go on website, there's a lot of things to say about anger. And many, many teachers also talk about anger. Anger is one of the mental formations in us. So the Buddha say anger, he give an example, anger is like fire. Imagine that. The bigger anger you have, the bigger fire in you. It's like burning many millions of acres of lands in you. This is like being recently we're in Colorado and many other states in the summer. We have a lot of fires. It's burning day and night. Even the Buddha say there is a realm of anger, a realm of fire. So the people who are continuously angry, they are constantly in the realm of hell, hell of fire. At this life, and that they will carry that with themselves many lives to come. And they burn themselves. And every time that you, this anger energy is keep rise in you, then you say that you are very, inside you say you feel it's kind of burning, right? Burning. So that's the two hindrances that we have been talking. So the third one is what?
Sleepiness or sloth.
Why is this a hindrance?
Inertia.
Yeah. Why is this sleeping? Because many people say that I'm lost my sleep. Insomnia is a difficulty for many elders, friends. But in meditation, in Buddhism, we say it's an obstacle. So what do you think? Why Buddha say yes, an obstacle? Sleeping, we need to have some kind. Some would say that I have to sleep 8 hours a day, otherwise I couldn't do anything. I don't have... Jolly?
It's pretty hard to be mindful when you... when you're sleepy,
mm-hmm.
when you're bored and indifferent to mm-hmm. the whole thing, but there's no room for mindfulness.
Mm. But for many people, they become some kind of obstacle in their life. You know, if you couldn't sleep for a day or two, you become very tiresome, right? Tiresome. But in meditations, sleepiness. So we have here is two sloth. We have physical and mental. So we have mental. In Buddhism, we call sleepy or sloth is a neutral state. It can be wholesome or it can be unwholesome. You see right here? Mm-hmm. You have to define in the mental state, it can be wholesome or can it be unwholesome. So for physical... or mental. So when we talk about the hindrance here, we relate to meditation. Remember that. Because in meditations, you have to be what?
Alert.
Relaxed,
but alert.
Awake, right? So if you sit meditate, if you are in a sloth or bottom state, you waste your time. You waste your time. And it's the happiness of physical. And for physical, here is because when you eat a lot, then what?
Get sleepy.
You get sleepy.
Some sleep. And it's become a state of happiness in your body. Yeah, happiness in your body. So that's why it's good in the morning when you meditate in the morning, because the food mostly you already digest. And after that, you have, if you have a good sleep, you meditate in the morning, you mostly be in an alert state, or must be more aware of that. Because the physical part is much light, right? Much lighter. Happiness. So the happiness of the body, the blue of the body.
But the mental state, what is the cause?
So the physical part is happiness or tiredness. But the mental state, so mental state when you are in sloth,
you become kind of a hazy.
Hazy? Right? Or it's kind of milky.
Thinking.
Foggy?
Or froggy. But mostly it's hazy in the mental state. You are not very clear in your own mental state. And when you are not, you're hazy, you become what? Being what?
Passive.
Inattentive.
Inattentive.
And this can be confusing too. In this space of confusion.
Because this relate to the physical is related to the mental state. For example, when you are tired, for example, your physical is tired, then your mental state is become not very alert and not very clear. So for example, when you you work the whole day for eight hours, then your body is tired. And if you come home and try to meditate, then you might fall into this kind of sleepiness because your body is tired. Right? Tired too. So it's become a tiresome for the body. Tiresome. So how do you care, or how do you treat sleepiness or sloth? So what's an antidote for that?
Attention.
Exercise.
Okay. So to wake up your body, right? Exercise. Yes, exercise is. So when you in meditations, if you are in a state of sloth or state of sleepiness or boredom, what do you do to get yourself out of that stage? Slap your face. Slap your face.
Just recognize that.
Open your eyes. Sometimes even when you open your eye, your eye just turns to close. It's automatically close itself when you're tired. Just like when you drive, when you're tired, you fall asleep, doesn't matter what you do. You just couldn't get yourself that stage. Mm-hmm. Even you try to roll out the window, do many things, slap on your face. I have experienced that. Yeah. Do many things, but your internal system is shut down. Mm. It's too tired. Robert, do you want to say something?
Just observing how much of the physical state is within programming, mm-hmm. has to do with sleep, eat, so forth, so on. I think I read something about Einstein getting 4 hours of sleep a night. Mm-hmm. Meditated a lot. Same with many people, you know, here we have to have 3 meals a day, have to have 8 hours of sleep a day. But do we really have to have this?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Question. Maybe it is to do with the program that we put in is what we get out.
So we in this, our society is a society of consumption. Mm-hmm. You see, that's society of consumption. And we always have a habit of consumption. You go to the feature, you eat something, you know, snacks. We have all a lot of consumption in our society, and that is very much related to our physical. And we have, and then we don't eat moderate, and that's why we have a problem with obesity.
Obesity
is in our society. You see, and that's, and when we have obesity, it's very much related to your mind. My very much is correlate this and that, and physical here, we, as Robert said, is most relate to our food, the food that we eat. It's very important in meditation. You eat the food that is easy for your body to digest, right? It's digest. For example, you eat a happy big state, and you try go home and meditate, I don't think you'll be in a weak state, because most of your blood is now go to your stomach to work, and then your brain, your mind is not real alert, right? So it's because state of some heavy food, then you have to have all the blood have to go down to the stomach and have to look for that. So if you have you eat light food, for example, vegetable, for example, and it's much light for your digestions, and it's good for you. So it's very much into our what kind of food are we consume in everyday life that relate to our mental state. Interesting. But we eat well and we chew it well, we have a lot of nutrition, but sometimes we don't take the time to chew it well. And we eat in a hurry way. We try to put as much food down to our stomach so we can run. That's mostly how in our society we have eat and run. Yeah? When I was in college, we have a boost called eat and run. Everybody would come and grab something and run. Eat and run. And we never have the time to really digest, to chew it well, so that the stomach do less work for us. You see? So, it's very much into our consumption related to our mental state. So as a practitioner, we have to be very smart on that. You know? As a practitioner, you know that what food that you eat relate to your practice and your awareness, your state of alertness. It's very important. So that's why, so we imagine that we have 3 meals a day, and we have less time, right? Less than the meal in the time of the Buddha. All the monks and nuns, they have only 1 meal a day. And they don't have to cook. They just go out and beg. And beg. And after finish begging, they go to sit down under the tree and finish the meal. And that's it for the whole day. So they most every moment of time they devote to the practice, the mental alertness. But now, a day we very much busy with our consumptions. We have to cook 3 meals a day, each meal 2 hours, 3 meals 6 hours. Then it's difficult. If you have family and you cook food, not for your family, but for children, you know, food for the family, for the adults, and for the children is food. So most of the time, it's been, filled by time of cooking, working. So we don't have much time for our practice. So if you, I say it's neutral because sleep sometimes is also need for our mental health state. We sleep the right amount of hours, for example. In practice, normally, mostly the monastic, they don't sleep a lot. Mostly spend time in meditations. And when you are in alertness, then you don't have to sleep a lot. But you sleep, if you sleep, you sleep like 3 or 4 hours, but you're very deep and very ease in your sleep. You don't have to turn and twist all night. And that's already enough. Just only 4 or 5 hours. Sometimes I sleep 4 hours, but after I get up, I feel very, very healthy. And very. But we have to sleep. In our sleep, we have deep and well sleep. Then it's very enough. Because you see that the body is tired, and that's why the body needs rest. Right? But sometimes we couldn't rest ourselves. Later on, we move to the next stage, is restlessness.
Tai, before you go on, can you share some other antidotes to that?
Okay.
I know we can actually rest. We can take a nap if we need to, or maybe get up and do walking meditation, but are there some other kinds of things?
According to the teachings, he say antidotes to... I read one article today, and they say that an antidote to sleepiness is effort.
Okay.
Yeah, and last time take up effort. He made the right effort. And I think last class they have own had spoke very practical about the efforts. How are you going to spend your efforts? You can be efforts, but wrong efforts. But still effort. You say go to casino, is you have to make effort to go to casino. Robert?
Effort? Intention?
Yeah.
Having the right intention.
Right intentions, right effort. So effort here isn't a positive effort, Sometimes we have negative efforts. Still like you got some people like the gangster or they go steal, they have to make the right very much effort to steal something out of the market.
It's always a catch.
Stealer, they have to make a big effort to steal someone out without getting caught, right? Effort. Go to casino. Sometimes you have to drive here to the mountain. Sometimes in the winter it's very dangerous, but you have to, to make a great effort to go there, right? But effort here always go along with mindfulness. Because when you are in the stage of awareness or of mindfulness, then you know, make the right effort. Because you know that this effort is it supports you and gives you the energy to go on, to move on. So it's an antidote to, for example, if you are... you fall asleep and you make an effort to be awake, for example, and then you take up get up and maybe take a walk instead of sit there and, you know, in a state of haziness. Instead of maybe just get up and get a walk and walk mindfully, right? And maybe you can walk and take go to the bathroom and wash your face, for example, with cold or hot water. Then you'll be awake right away. For example, we have snow here, and you go over there and you get a handful of snow and put on your face.
No, I never do.
Right away, you'll be, you'll be awakened right away. And so you have to make some efforts to get yourself out of a state of haziness, state of pure confusion, or state of miss, for example. So right efforts is very important, you know. You have to make the right efforts. That's why in the eight on the eightfold path, we have the Buddha have to say, have to use the word right efforts. He don't say efforts, we have to say right efforts. Efforts in the eightfold path, right efforts. And even on the five powers, last time they heard on this. So efforts is sometimes it's from the April path, from the five powers, many, many places they have right efforts. Even the six parameter also have right efforts. See? It's number four. I have to call my hand. Where it's number four on the right, on the sixth parameter. Generosity, bodhi, generosity, mindfulness training, your patience, and then right efforts on number four, on the sixth parameter. So in many places to have right efforts. So antidotes to that is right effort. Okay. An antidote to anger is what?
Loving kindness.
Yes, loving kindness. So antidote to this. So loving. Kindness. And we can talk about that. An antidote to attachment then is what?
Death.
Death, death. Yes, you contemplate every day. You contemplate. You contemplate about death. You will open your heart up, and you will let go easily.
And there's a better answer than that, right?
Yeah, there's a better answer than that. Attachment is
letting go.
Let go. Equanimity. Equanimity. Letting go. But specifically, death, I think, is also one good one for and for attachment. Because you think that one day, I have to let go everything. I have to go. Mm-hmm. And thus, you don't have to hold on anything. Whatever you do for the perfect, for sentient beings and for yourself. You open yourself. And when you practice that, you will see a lot of transformations in yourself. Contemplate day by day. You have to do, the more you repeat it, you know, repeat in a way that you feel in it, you see. So that's why people in Pure Land they repeat or recite the name of the Amitabha Buddha the million times to make it as a habit. You have something to say, Nicole?
I had the opportunity to visit my neighbor in a hospice and he was dying of cancer, and I went to visit him, and I asked him if he needed anything from his house to, you know, make him comfortable. And he said he didn't need anything. Mm-hmm. He had let it all go. That really struck me. Mm-hmm. He was very peaceful.
Yeah, if you practice well, you know, you prepare for yourself moment, each moment by your life of letting go. Even your good thought, you have to let it go too. And at that time, you're very at ease with yourself. must be at ease. Even though you lie on the bed of pervaded by many illness, you're still at ease. You accept that there is, you know the process, you prepare yourself, you know it already. So you're able to let go of everything. And the Buddha said that the dearest things in this life, or the lovest person in this life, you have to let go. Things that you love it dearly, one day you have to let it go. In the beginning of this chanting book, there's a gatha saying that the dearest, the most treasured things you love in this life, one day you have to let it go. And if you repeat that, you will see how changed you are, how open heart you are. Because you are there for whatever that is, and you treasure it fully in the present of it. And one day you know that I'll be there fully for it already, so I'm able to let it go. Just like that. And we all know that one day, even the beautiful person in your life, your partner, children, you all have to let you they all have to go. And when we, every day, we have some moment to contemplate about that, thinking about that, and you will see how much that we open ourselves to the world, and we don't attach to our own idea. When you say, "What my idea is just an idea," and then you don't have to attach. Normally, we very much attach to our idea, what we have, and if we have that inside, say, "My idea is just an idea," then you're able to easily let it go, and that's where you don't make war. And ideology is that idea, and many countries go into war because of ideology. Mm. Even Vietnam, between Democrat and Republican is ideology. You see that? And Democrat, they are attached to their own ideologies, and Republican, and that's why they go back and forth and fight. Same thing, ideology. View. Ideology is view. The view of Republican and the view of Democratic. And they attach that view and create suffering for both parties. You see, here is, we can look at the common goal is the goodness, the good of the people. Whether you are Republican or whether you are Democrat, but it's the good of the country. If we look at that, then we have a common good.
With two opposites like this, for instance, the government here in America, it's a polarizing dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
One fighting the other instead of accepting what one is. So nothing gets done. Too much ego.
Yeah, this is always attached. Whatever behind is the ego. Manipulate, you see, the ego of Democrat, the ego of Republican, and identities behind that is the identity of the ego, and that's why in Buddhism we try to look at the ego and see what is the ego, what is that, identify that and see, and this is just all component, different component come together to make the ego. So once we understand the nature of all that, and we're able to let go, we have to have the insight to understand the different components come together. And once we understand that component, the ego is made up of non-ego, you see. Okay, anybody have any question on this one?
Excuse me, Ty, did mm-hmm. you say the ego is made up of
non-ego?
Non-ego.
Mm-hmm. You see, the ego is the self, and the self have to make up something that happened to the non-self. Mm-hmm. For example, this body is something we identify as ourself, and behind is the ego. But it's made up of what? The five elements. Right? Mm-hmm. What is the five element?
Earth, water, air, fire.
See, it's made of earth, air, water, fire, winds. Right? That's mm-hmm. the four great element. But actually, it's sak form to mean feelings, to perceptions, and formations, and consciousness. And that all come together to make this body. Actually, it's four great elements, earth, air, water, winds, and then the five. So we make up this body. See? And then we call it self, myself, for example. Mm. God, I'm myself. And if whoever touched myself, then you'll be in trouble.
Touch your own self.
We create our own problems. Just like that. So the fourth one is restlessness.
That's me.
This can be agitation, worry. It's an obstacle. So we have so our mind is always in a lot of time in the many 80 or 90% of the time that we are in a restlessness state, right? Restlessness. We are not able to rest. And when we are unable to rest, then it's our mind is to a stage of agitation. It's always in a stage of agitations. So it means that our mind is we don't have inability to calm ourselves. We're lacking the quality of calmness in us. So that means we are very restlessness. And this was always disturb our stage of stillness. So it's the opposite of stillness here. Stillness. We're not able to sit. And the Buddha gave an example as when we are in a restlessness stage. The Buddha gave an example as a monkey. A monkey, he called a monkey mind. Mm-hmm. Our mind always jumping from one place to the next. Sometimes we sit here, but our mind is our house. Say, oh, my house is not locked yet. we sit here, but our mind in Australia. We just only think about our friends in Australia, and then your mind is already there, not here. So we release one thing, we grasp another, the next thing, right away. It's a monkey. But the monkey, you go to India, we see a lot of monkey. But not in the United States. Here we say a frog mind, it's jumping. So you put the frog in the distance, it jump out right away. So frog mind. But Indian, because in the time of the Buddha, there's a lot of monkey. When they meditate, a lot of monkey running around. You know, try to go on one branch to the next branch. And that's why the Buddha tell his disciple, you see, our mind is like that. It's a monkey mind.
It's a good description.
Yeah. We always... monkey is not able to rest, sit down at one place. So it's hot. And our mind is in restlessness. It's another form of kind of, we sometimes feel guilt for ourselves. Guilt. And guilt is a big obstacle for many of the Western friends, right? In mm-hmm. Western society, mm-hmm. we have a lot of guilt in ourselves. And And once we have the guilt and always arise in our consciousness, then it's an obstacle to stillness. An obstacle to stillness. Stillness. Peacefulness. And you see that when our mind is in the restlessness, it's always in a state of agitations. And that agitation leads to some kind of self-unfulfilled. The mind is not fulfilled itself. The mind is not fulfilled itself. So that's why I always try to jump or to run, to grasp some things, to fulfill itself. So it's a lack of self-content. Self-content. The myself. Here is, when we say my here is, we say that we refer to the untruth mind, false mind. Or defile.
F-I-D-E-F-I-L-E. Defile.
Your mind is not very clear. Defilement.
D-E-F. So it's E-D-E-F. So I-L-E.
The Buddha used corruption of mind. Corruption of mind. Or restlessness. He said that bhikkhus, there are these five obstructions, hindrance, corruption of mind, weakeners of wisdom. What are the five? Sensual desire, ill will, sloth, torpor, restlessness, and remorse.
Number five is remorse.
Number five is restlessness, also go along with remorse. Remorse, I mean guilt. And this is this quote from the Pali Canon, Samyutta Nikaya, and that's the. So is the Buddha used the term in the sutra, they say the corruptions of the mind. The mind that means in a stable stage. So what is the antidote to restlessness?
Stillness.
But actually, yeah, stillness is also about concentration. It's the term, concentration. Concentration leading to stillness. When your mind is in concentration, you will have, it depends on the degree of stillness you have. Concentration or meditation, is the term that antidote it. So this is the fourth entrance that the obstacle in our practice of meditation. So that's why we use meditations to treat it, restlessness, to bring our mind back into the state of stillness. And we can apply this, you know, walking meditation also one time. If when you walk and your mind is with your feet, with your breath, where you are, then you bring, you're able to to cure or to treat this restlessness. As you know, we have this, but especially in children, have a lot of energies of restlessness. They use the term hyperactivity. Yeah. But sometimes we try to busy ourselves because we have too much this kind of energies. We try to get that out, busy ourselves, so that we can do it. But in a state of unawareness, try to busy ourselves. So in our society, we always occupy ourselves with many, many tasks. We call multitask. Computer can do multitask, and so ourselves can do multitask. We're talking and we're writing at the same time. We talk on the phone and we write on the computer. Right? So our mind being divided. Sometimes we make many mistakes that we don't know, and we don't really put the whole energies for the conversations. Sometimes we upset ourselves by doing that too, because you're not able to fully pay attention to the person, to the conversations, but at the same time you run on a computer, so you upset yourself if a person says something maybe a little bit negative or unwholesome, you get upset right away because you're not fully there for the conversations, right? So today I just want to tell you with this sleepiness, restlessness.
Rule number five.
Stay tuned. We'll come back. So if you you practice meditation, you will be encounters some of this or many of this on in your meditations. So aware of that hindrance, you know, in your practice. So if you're able to aware, you can recognize all this in your practice, more or less, you know. So you know what to do when you encounter sleepiness. You be right, apply the right efforts in the right way. Bring some kind of CDF says, you can do exercise to wake up your body. You can drink tea. Tea is also as good.
I was listening to, he was a doctor, not from a Buddhist tradition background at all, and they were asking him certain questions, and basically he went to the restlessness a lot, how our minds are so restless, mm-hmm. we can't take time to relax and calm down, and he feels like it leads to the majority of our physical ailments, mm-hmm. because we don't take the time.
Yes.
And he said, they were asking him, so what do you do to take the time? And his big thing was meditation, so that people should meditate every day to help with their physical ailments,
yeah.
to calm them off.
So if you have a lot of restlessness and you try to overwork your body, and one day your body will get tired, right? Tired and you get sick. So you have to know how to relax your body. Use this energy, turn it around as a relaxation energy. And you know, like all this hindrance, it's not only Buddhist. You can be a non-Buddhist, you still encounter attachment, anger, sleepiness or restlessness. Even you, what doesn't matter who you are, what you are, as a human, we all have this. And because in Buddhists we practice meditation, we have to recognize so that we can able to treat it, to have five samadhi so that we can overcome this tension, so that we can move on to on our path of liberation. So it doesn't matter you whether you Buddhist or not, or you know whether you practice practitioner or not. We have to in your life we encounter all this. But the matter is we recognize it or not. When you recognize it, you work with it, and you transform it. But if you not recognize it, it's there as a form of a seed in your consciousness. And when it have the right condition, the right environment, it will pop up. And with your experience that. So it's kind of the universal for everybody. Anybody have any questions? Want to So if we have don't have any question, we'll stop here and
question.
You have a question?
Robert.
Oh, Robert, have a question?
About multitasking. It really is not possible to do two things completely. You only have the ability of doing one thing at a time.
That's how am I developed, you know, to do. But you know, our society today is training us to do many things at one time. You see, we try to get the most products, you know, but it's go reverse. But you know, you work in a company, you do it somewhere, even at your house. We try to, as a human, we have a habit to do many tasks at one time. But once you come to a practice, you know, we try to encourage you to do one task at a time.
Yes.
Just, if you meditate, just meditate. Totally be there 100%.
Yes.
And so that you can be really there and be present there and enjoy what you do. That's the Buddha encouraged to do. Yeah. When you walk, you just walk, spend 100% of your energy is walking. But normally we walk with our feet, but our head is working. Our head is working all the time. So, but we have to, you know, repeating, you know, like just continue practicing. So practice make it perfect. Okay, so we'll stop here. So thank you very much. So I invite three Sabathya so we can conclude our class tonight.